Okay, we're back on.
We're back online and everything is?
Yep.
All right, perfect. All right. Now it's time for presentations from the public. I see that two of them left. Excuse me. There was a lady here that, oh, right over there. All right. Melissa Strawn. Thanks for your patience. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Melissa Strawn, and I'm here to shed light on what I see as a great injustice being committed by the various safety net programs within the county, along with the employees who are employed to help our most vulnerable. I think that the county has defaulted on a sacred obligation to protect the poorest and most vulnerable members of our community. I'm a mother of five who is fleeing domestic violence and living in, I think, the county's sole shelter, or one of, due to this violence. I've spent every single day over the past 3 weeks of my homelessness bearing witness to the injustice that my fellow community members face while trying to procure food, housing, transportation, warm clothing, medical care, and legal assistance. Here is a snippet of what I have observed. The county's, again, what I think is the sole homeless shelter, is only half full. While I watch people who have reached their 29-day maximum be evicted into the snow while sick with their children. I watch people literally sleep on the concrete down the street from that shelter. The county's sole eligibility worker at the Health and Human Services Office, his name is Danny, don't know his last name, he denies homeless assistance to the other domestic violence survivors and other homeless folks by saying, if you live in a homeless shelter, you do not count as homeless. Yet I received a letter yesterday that said that the reason I was denied homeless assistance is because I failed to provide a statement saying that I was living in a temporary shelter. So it seems by their own rules, they're inaccurate. Expedited food stamp benefits, which are legally supposed to be delivered within 3 days, took me 9 days to receive and required to be for me to return to that office every single day for over a week, talk to multiple supervisors, and even though I was told I would receive them for my children and I the day before Thanksgiving, it took 9 days. This is just a snippet of what I'm seeing. I feel lucky. My abuser is wealthy and powerful, and I know the law, and I will get justice, and I know that very well. But I see people who don't know that, and who don't know the rules, who don't have a car, who don't have the tenacity or wherewithal to return again and again and again and be dehumanized. And then I look at this agenda, and I see hundreds of thousands of dollars about to be approved to Health and Human Services, and that money is going to bureaucracy and administration. Why is it not going to the actual people? Why is it not being given to the children? The last thing I'll say is I have a six-year-old who's on the spectrum, and so he fixates on topics. He had to watch that woman be evicted after the 29 days. And every hour, on the hour, multiple times, he talks about seeing her get evicted. He's been re-traumatized after already being traumatized when the whole house is half empty and she had to be thrown out in the street in the snow with her two-year-old. Thank you.
Mr. John Spizzano. Hi, sir.
John Spizzano. I was in front of the board about 2 months ago regarding the building department, and you were to look into it and make some changes, of which nothing has really happened. Still have the same problems. I did run into a Mr. Rick Dean when I was I stopped there at 8 o'clock, and very nice man, people. He's going to look into the situation, but when the building department itself is about as organized as a Chinese fire drill, you can never get a telephone call returned or an email. And I've done it at least twice a week. I tried to get a hold of, I forgot his name, but it's the head of the building department. I haven't heard from him. It's been 2 weeks. I've got a permit on a little job on 96, and had original inspector. He quit, and he had one correction. He corrected it. Got a new inspector, and he wrote it with me. The man, really a nice gentleman, but he does not understand or the National Electric Code. And we've got to get some people in there that know what the devil they're doing. And the common courtesy to return an email or a phone call, they never do. And it kind of leaves me in the position, I don't care what you want, just tell me. And I'll do it. I'm tired of fighting this. But the building department has to be reorganized. Or we've been in business for 77 years. I mean, we're not kids. I moved up here about 10 years ago and brought the company with me from Los Angeles, which I know is a dirty word. But we were one of the five largest electrical contractors down there. We had offices in San Francisco and Phoenix, Arizona. So I'm not, that's not the word to use, John. I've been around, okay? I carry an EE out of Notre Dame University. So I'm not the stupidest man in town, but I feel like we have to do something. And you read the reviews on Siskiyou County on the internet and that. We're number one of the counties not to move to. And they cite the building department. That's all I have to say. Hopefully, Mr. Great Dave, Dean will get into this. I nailed him this morning. I was there a little before he came in. Said he's going to get into it. I don't know what else to tell you. You've got a problem and you're ignoring it outside of dams and that. I've had owners threaten to sue the county because what it takes to get a permit and a very simple permit took me about 6 months to get. Because they have lost three, they had some questions, we answered them three times, and finally I just took a package down to them and said, this is it. You know, this is the third time I've submitted this. I don't know what you're gonna do, but you've got a problem. You know, outside of the dams, you know. There's other things in this county that have to be addressed, and I hope
thank you, sir.
All I have to say.
Thank you. Mr. Steve Radford.
Good morning. My name is Steve Radford. Yeah, I live right across the street from Evergreen Elementary School, and I get to see the parents every morning, rain or shine, snow, cold as hell out there. They're dropping their kids off. That's America. It makes me so proud. I am a very, very, passionate person about Siskiyou County. And I wasn't that way when I moved here. I said, what have I done 13 years ago? But the first thing I found out was that the people over in Scott Valley were fighting for their water, and they were ready to stand up and fight against the fishing game and turn their weir gates on. And that's why I stand here today. There's a rancher over in Shasta Valley ready to fight, ready to stand up against the fines and penalties that are being put on these ranchers for their water, generations of their water, all by the political BS coming down from Sacramento. We cannot stand by Sacramento any longer. That is a corrupt state of its own up there, owned by the Chinese. We are an independent county. We made this state. The counties of California made the state. The counties the state answers to the counties. The counties don't answer to the state. We have to get that in our DNA and turn this thing around. The cities made the counties. The communities made the cities. That's where we started from. The fires we've got going on in this county are big business, it sounds like to me today, or looks like to me today. They're hanging out here all summer long, you know, letting these fires burn, and then hanging around all summer long collecting money to deal with whatever they're dealing with. It's hard to say, other than, you know, cleaning up from the mess that they've made by letting these fires happen in the first place. The fuel that they put up in the air that comes down on the trees, which is called chemtrails, the aluminum bromide that comes down and makes our earth hotter than ever, it's in the trees, it's in the needles of the trees, and those trees go up faster than ever before. The forest fires are much, much harder than they've ever been before. They explode, and that's what we're up against. We have to take our county back. We have to stand as individuals. We have to support our sheriff. CSPOA is Constitutional Sheriffs and Peace Officers Association. The sheriff has the authority to keep anybody out of our county, but he only has that authority as long as we stand behind him as citizens, and we must rise to that occasion. Otherwise, the spotted owl thing that took out the forest is going to take out our ranchers again. Once again, we're going to lose our ranching and our heritage. If you drive around the county here, it's amazing. You drive away out there, it's like being in you know, this county 30 years ago or 100 years ago. It's so beautiful, and there's 5 ranches out there. It's amazing. As a person who grew up in the cities, I appreciate this county so much, and I'm passionate about it, and I want to be a part of helping it make become a better place. We need your help also. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rafford. Joseph Aguirre. Do you want to talk to her?
Could I have a little bit more time?
Yeah, I just want to speak ahead of you, all right? Mr. Rick Dean.
Good morning, Board of Supervisors. Rick Dean, Community Development Director. During the November 1st meeting, we had a request from Supervisor Howe to look into the conservation easements for the county. At that time, we reported in on most of that contracts, basically the deficit and so forth. This conversation is too large for CDD, so I've invited our assessor, Mr. Craig Kay, to address that, and I will defer the remainder of my 3 minutes to him.
Okay. Mr. Craig Kay, thank you.
Craig Kay, assessor recorder. When the question was posed to me by Bernadette and Rick, why would someone want to be in a conservation easement and an ag preserve contract? And the other part of the question, that if I understood it correctly, was how much are these conservation easements costing the county? But in reality, this is apples and oranges. Conservation easements don't do anything, but they record a deed. Someone pays a lot of money to restrict the land as to what they can do. For example, we have lumber companies that collected $2-3 million to record this conservation easement. And all it does is it restricts what they can do to the land, but they continue to log it, and it's just reserved for the public recreation use and logging and stuff like that. So the only way that a property becomes exempt is if it qualifies for a welfare exemption, and they have to be on the state's organizational clearance list, so they have an actual certificate. For example, the Trust for Public Land, SISCU, Trust for Public Land, those agencies are on that list, and they apply for the exemptions and for the most part get them, but it has nothing to do with the conservation easement. So it's kind of like the conservation, in fact, most of the land under conservation easement is still being taxed at the appropriate rate, whether it be under ag preserve, timber production zone, or a regular assessment. So I'm hoping that answers the question, but if you have more than that, I would be happy to entertain that.
Mr. Roger Howe?
It's all right. I don't think fully understood the question.
Oh.
The question, I understand the example you just gave clearly. The question I have was more related to easements or property purchases where a environmental group or company would strip the water right off of the property. And what is the loss in value in the property tax rolls of that property without the water right to go ahead and manage that land as it always has been?
We would not, in my office, look at the value of the land in that aspect. It would be more of a what has sold with and without those rights and what would be the fair market value of those lands. But we don't specifically go in and reassess something because they no longer have the water rights. It's because mainly what we do is fee simple. That means just the whole ball of wax.
I understand, but I'm looking at a more global.
Yeah. No, I understand. So something like that would be just like a lot of these other issues. We'd have to wait to see what the market dictates to determine what we place on the roll.
Okay. To me, there are two paramount issues associated with that type of transaction. Number one, the loss of production on that land going forward and what that does to county revenue according to the Ag Commission. And number two, the property value loss should there be a transaction, which I guess would be within your purview, should that be sold in the future without the water right that's always been associated with it.
Right. And that would, so I can watch that, but right now I don't have any information on values pertaining to
that. That was my question.
Okay. All right.
Thank you.
Mr. Kay, thank you. And Mr. Dean, thanks for setting that up. And thank you. Mr. Joseph McGuire, we don't bite, sir, so feel as comfortable as possible in front of us. Nice having you here.
Yeah. Also, I mean, it's probably not that important, but it's pronounced Aguirre.
Oh, Geary. I apologize.
It's okay. My name is Joseph Geary. I'm here to talk about people who have suffered and who have been scrutinized by the county for asthma and possible rules about county workers simply not wanting to do their jobs. I've heard my mom, Melissa Strong, she's over there, scared and afraid for her four children, including me, about their living situation and the stress of having to deal with such large things like dealing with a domestic abuser who wants to destroy her life by taking away her money and her freedom and her kids. Is just, it's a really hard thing to deal with on top of the stuff that people that just don't want to do their jobs, like online trends and stuff. They want to normalize people of, like, people just working jobs saying that, like, oh, if we mess up your food or something like that, just stop being, like, a Karen, that's what they call it, which is simply just wanting to get their things right, which is my mom just wanting to get her freedom. And on top of that, my grandpa, who has horrible lungs and a fluid case of chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, or COPD, his inhaler, he's made a request for it, and the county hasn't granted that request, even though it's been 45 days. And I think that's a really difficult thing to do, because I lived with him for a couple of days before being homeless, and just hearing the, like, his coughs and his, you know, horrible, like, it's a terrible thing to hear. It sounds like he's suffering. So, just, yeah, people not wanting to do their jobs, it's really difficult for my family now, because my mom is going through a really hard thing. And so, yeah, that's
thank you. I'm going to take a little bit of liberty here. Ms. Strong, just want to make sure, are you in contact with Siskiyou Domestic Violence?
That's the shelter I'm referring to.
Okay, I want to make sure you're connected. All right.
They have helped me, and I'm grateful, but there's a lot of injustice going on.
Right. Thank you, Ms. Strong. We're going to go to the consent agenda now. I'm going to pull item C, Mr. Bob. I'm not yet, but I'm going to pull item C. And I believe another colleague has another item they'd like to pull as well.
I'd like to pull W, please.
D is in dog.
D is in dog. Blaine with C is in cat, which we'll get.
Got that? Right. And W is in Wendy.
W is Wendy, that's right.
Thank you.
Any other wishes from colleagues for agenda topics or a motion to approve the remainder?
So moved.
I'll second that motion to approve the remainder, Ms. Wendy.
Okay. All righty. Supervisor Howe?
Aye.
Supervisor Cobbsett?
Aye.
Supervisor Valenzuela?
Sure.
Supervisor Ogren?
Aye.
And Supervisor Chris?
I'll be an aye.
Thank you.
I'll go in alphabetical order here. Ms. Davis, I'll turn this over to you, but Mr. Darren Loss, congratulations.
Thank you.
Congratulations. If you want to just introduce yourself formal wise, but I think we all know you.
Good morning, Angela Davis, County Administrator. Good morning, Chair, members of the board. It is my honor and my pleasure to have this item be pulled in order to recognize and introduce to some and present to others Mr. Darrell Laws, who is our new chief of Cal Fire. So we are super excited, very proud, and we have such a great working relationship with Mr. Laws that it will be seamless, and I promise lots of incidents for him. So we look forward to a very long and lasting relationship. So with that, I would like to introduce Mr. Laws to you and allow him to have words.
Wow, thank you, Angela. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. I just wanted to appear in person to just talk to you for a few minutes. Darrell Laws, I'm the new unit chief for Cal Fire Siskiyou. Hopefully today be appointed as the county fire warden for Siskiyou County. I've worked in this county for, next year will be 32 years. I started here right out of high school as a firefighter, and I've stayed in the county working for Cal Fire for that 32 years in different positions, and every station in the county, every place you can work in Cal Fire, I've managed to find a spot and stay here locally in the county. Very happy that I've been able to do that. So I look forward to serving the communities and the citizens of Siskiyou County, and also and the state in my new position as the unit chief of Cal Fire Siskiyou. So, do you have any questions for me this morning?
Who takes over the deadlift crew?
I brought Chief Raley with me, who is the assistant chief and in charge of deadlift camp, and also Assistant Chief Greg Roth has recently moved to the position of operations chief for the Cal Fire Siskiyou unit. So probably visit with you at a later date to name both of them as deputy county fire wardens also. So, in execution of their duties.
Thank you, Red Hal.
Hi, congratulations. So,
thanks, sir.
I don't, I'm so happy for you and for us to have someone local and not appointed from afar who doesn't understand the complexity of this landscape and the firefighter challenges that the city and the city county. Anyway, Phil should be very comfortable, as I am just tickled to see you replace Phil, and looking forward to a long, continued long relationship and good relationship like that with the other chiefs.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. I appreciate that. I look forward to it, too.
I can't add to that other than congratulations. It's always been the emphasis of this board to have someone local for this position, just because of the reasons Supervisor Howe stated, and we're just thrilled that you received this position, and congratulations.
Thank you.
What they said. Thrilled to have you. Thank you.
And I appreciate the board also. All of you that participated, and we've had fires in the past where we needed to have you come and address different agencies and express those concerns for your constituents. So I really appreciate your assistance, and I look forward to it in the future. Thank you very much.
And I would move to appoint Chief Laws as fire warden, just to count.
Sorry.
Roll call vote.
All right. Supervisor Howe?
Aye.
Supervisor Cobstead.
Aye.
Supervisor Valenzuela.
Yes.
Supervisor Ogren.
Aye.
And Supervisor Chris.
Aye.
Thank you
very much. I'll pull item, we'll discuss item D as in dog. Supervisor Howe.
Yeah. This is, I see Rick in front of me. But my comment, I don't have any issue with this topic, but I wanted to draw attention to maybe some of the staff work that was in here. Back we held some public meetings, no one attended. You know, we didn't get any people reaching out or certainly storming down the doors to take advantage of this. And maybe if our information officer could put a little attention on this and an outreach that way through the public, maybe we'd get a little more attention on this important topic. That's all I have.
Okay. Thank you.
And with that, I'll.
Second. Alrighty. Supervisor Help.
Aye.
Supervisor Cobstead.
Aye.
Supervisor Valenzuela.
Aye.
Supervisor Ogren.
Aye.
And Supervisor Chris.
I'll be an aye.
Thank you.
Item W, Supervisor Ogren. And we may, Ms. Chris, we may have to let the sheriff in if there's any questions.
He's online.
Yeah, perfect. Supervisor Ogren.
Thank you. My question is for the sheriff. I am wondering if this MOU and the not to exceed is to extend the contract because it has expired, or is it just to extend the money, the funds?
Sorry, I'm not able to be there in person. Hope you can hear me okay. I'm out of town at an executive development training. So the item before you is it's extending the three-year contract, which will include the present year going into 2023. And so the $219,000 is for the present time. And so in July, we'll go back into a new cycle of hopefully creating a three-year contract.
So did the contract actually expire?
Yes, so the previous contract did expire in June of 2022. And we've been in discussions with the city council about changing. Well, not only in Doris, but throughout the county, the different MOU languages. And so we came to an agreement, and then because there's so many different things that we need to work on with the language, we have an agreement to extend what we currently have so that we can provide the services through the end of this fiscal year. And hopefully we'll get the new language in place for a future contract that's hopefully a three-year one. There's just a lot of different pieces that neither party feels comfortable having in the language for the long term, but we want to be able to provide services to Doris. And so essentially this is just having that extension for this current fiscal year.
So when did we start to negotiate knowing that this was expired 6 months ago?
Yeah, it's been over probably close to a year. There's a lot of different pieces. And I think I went to the Doris. We finally got sort of an idea of what we're going to push for. We've been meeting with the council several times now. I think a couple weeks ago I met with them last just to iron out some of the language. So, yeah, it's been in progress. I presented the information I think in the September 19th meeting, and they did sign it. We did not get the copy though until this last, I guess you'd say, cycle in order to get to the board.
So you feel comfortable that come June, when this expires, you'll be able to move forward with a solid contract moving forward for 3 years or whatever your term is?
Yes, that's correct. And the same for the other contract cities.
Okay. Okay, I'm satisfied with that.
I would ask the motion of Supervisor Ogden.
I'll move to approve.
I'll second and just comment that the City of Doris is happy with what the Sheriff's doing and trying to address this and talking with the City of Doris. So thank you, Supervisor Ogden. We have a motion and a second, Ms. Wendy. So now a roll call.
Supervisor Help?
Aye.
Supervisor Cobbs?
Aye.
Supervisor Valenzuela?
Yes.
Supervisor Ogren?
Aye.
And Supervisor Chris?
I'll be an aye.
Thank you.
Now we'll do RCRC. Public request, item set for those, it's item 7A, public request, Rural County Representatives of California. Thank you for
through the chair. So I'd like to introduce Patrick Blacklock. He's the president and CEO of RCRC. I asked him to come up and just familiarize our board yet again on the services and what RCRC does for those member counties, especially for Supervisor Ogren. She's going to become the new rep delegate for the GSCA. Is that
yes,
right?
You got it.
There's so many of these GS.
Yeah, I'm impressed.
So anyway, welcome. I appreciate you making the trek from Sacramento to come to the board this morning. And of course, the roads were clear for you, so that doesn't always happen this time of the year. So welcome.
It was a beautiful drive, and thank you, Supervisor Kopsa, for the introduction, and thank you, Mr. Chair, for having me here today. And I want to say from the onset that I'm hopeful that you'll have questions and feedback, because that really helps keep us informed to hear directly what's on your mind. So please don't hesitate to stop me anywhere along the way to ask those questions, provide that feedback, and certainly we'll have time at the end if you can go to the next slide. But I wanted to begin with, what is RCRC, the Rural County Representatives of California? We are a mutual benefit corporation made up of 39 member counties. And we are considered by the federal government to be an instrumentality of government. And as such, I'm using there's a slide hesitation, but our vision is to be the premier advocate and innovative service provider for rural counties in California. So we're not only there to be your voice at the state legislature and at the federal level, but also we look for areas where we can achieve economies of scale and be that innovative service provider. And that's what Supervisor Kopsa was referencing to earlier with the Golden State Connect Authority, and I'll talk a little bit more about those affiliate entities as we go on with the presentation. But you can kind of see, well, if it comes back on the next slide here, we'll give her a moment. I wanted to cover our strategic plan, which our board of directors adopted last year, and it includes some areas that I think you'll find not surprising, that broadband, housing, forest resiliency and wildfire, water resiliency, these are the topics you're going to see sort of permeated throughout our strategic plan, which drills all the way down to actionable strategies within it. And that's what really guides staff on a day-to-day basis. It's a three-year plan, and part of why we're out here is to share what are the elements in that plan, but also to take back your comments, because it's a living document that we want to keep updated based on changing conditions on the ground in counties. You can see a slide on state and federal advocacy, and that's really the cornerstone of our association. And that's where I think RCRC is well known. Thank you, that's the perfect slide. And if you look under the state policy areas, I don't think any of those, oh, you can go to the next slide. I don't think any of those areas will be, again, surprising to you, that broadband, housing, water, drought, forest health, and wildfire are the key topics that we're working on. But at the bottom of that row on the left, you see California Public Utilities Commission. And that's really a niche special area for us. And it covers not only wildfire in the form of utility regulation, but also broadband. And we are spending a considerable amount of time drilling down into the regulatory processes underway at CPUC. And as you may know, they tend to be a bit Byzantine in terms of being able to navigate and being able to engage. And that's where we feel we can achieve those economies of scale and be able to do that and do it so effectively. And we feel like we have been so effective that Commissioner Houck with CPUC has been very actively reaching out and actually visiting rural counties in partnership with RCRC. I myself was with her visiting rural counties on the east side over the summer to talk broadband utility regulation. And so that's just an example of where we can be your voice in an area and a place that would be pretty hard to navigate otherwise. On the right, you see ad hoc committees. We had three ad hoc committees of county supervisors active this year, and the topics were drought and water, wildfire forest stewardship, and cannabis regulation. And so that kind of gives you a sense of what our board wanted to drill down and really take a deeper dive and use those ad hoc committees to update our policy principles. And our board will be actually, Supervisor Cobstaff will be there tomorrow to receive reports from those ad hocs and, in some cases, look at the draft product that they have produced in terms of policy principle updates. If you go to the next slide. But I want to spend a little bit of time talking about our affiliate entities as well. And Golden State Finance Authority, the joint powers agency made up of those same 39 counties, and the National Home Buyers Fund is a nonprofit entity we operate on a national level. And really what those entities do is provide financing so people can live and thrive in their communities. And if you look at the left, since 1993 in Siskiyou County, GSFA has helped 145 individuals or families purchase their homes, primarily in the form of down payment assistance. And as you may know, either government, if you go to purchase a home and you need assistance purchasing that home, there's two ways you can get down payment assistance. One is a family or family member can provide that to you, but the other is a governmental housing entity like GSFA. And so what GSFA seeks to do is provide specialized programs, particularly for rural communities that can help those communities thrive. And home ownership is just one example. They also provide, we also provide energy retrofit financing and other financing that can assist folks. On the right is a new program that the GSFA board launched just this year, and that is to help county employees, in particular, purchase homes. And the reason for that is we recognize our rural counties have had elevated vacancy rates. Some counties are reporting 20-30% departments, and may even have some with higher vacancy rates. Those, as a former county administrator, I could tell you when it went above 8 or 9%, I became alarmed. And to hear the numbers that are being cited today tell me we've got a big challenge in recruiting and retaining county employees. So this was one way that GSFA could help, and you can see some of the counties that where employees have taken advantage of that. Even in the midst of a pretty challenging housing market, it's already being used. Can you go to the next slide? Golden State Connect Authority is our newest joint powers agency that Supervisor Cobstaff mentioned. We, again, 39 of our members, all of them have joined Golden State Connect Authority. And really, it is there to bring broadband to communities where private providers are either unwilling or unable to do so. And it's had a three-phase approach for doing so. The first was to make sure that all of our counties have broadband strategic plans. And I'll talk a little bit more about where we were successful there, getting a grant to do that in the next slide. But the second has been to provide, is to provide technical assistance to counties who are already engaged in broadband efforts. And we, for example, have been connecting. We have technical consultants already retained, so if a county's thinking of doing a project, we can connect them immediately and get them that assistance. But the third is to actually do projects and to put broadband in the ground. And in the end, to own and operate an open access public broadband system so that, again, for communities where broadband was not otherwise going to get delivered, GSCA is aiming to do that. And so, as you can see on the right, we have been tremendously successful in getting some initial funding. 84 applications have been submitted under the Local Agency Technical Assistance Program with the CPUC. SB 156 provided funding for broadband deployment. That funding is deployed through the CPUC. The first wave of funding is the Local Agency Technical Assistance monies. There's $45 million available for non-tribal governmental entities and nonprofits. Of that $45 million, you can see we've been, there's $37 million have already been submitted. We have about 35 applicants who are participating through Golden State Connect Authority, which represents about $17 million. And that's already being awarded, the majority of that's already being awarded. And we have a model set up where we have partnered with Utopia Fiber, which is an equivalent of a joint powers agency out of Utah. They're the largest open access provider in the nation, and they have tremendous experience as a public agency running an open access broadband system. So our goal in partnering with them was not to reinvent the wheel or create a lot of overhead, but rather to partner and contract to take advantage of their expertise to launch a broadband system to meet our rural community needs. And so Utopia Fiber is acting as our project manager, and then we have Tilson Engineering on ground or under contract to do actual engineering. So our goal with these is to do actual engineering in rural communities, including Siskiyou, so that we can have the engineering complete. So when the next wave of funding under SB 156 becomes available, and that's the big tranche of funding, and it's for construction. When that becomes available, we can move immediately into construction planning for ultimately construction in your communities to bring fiber to the home. for those communities where private providers, again, are unwilling or unable to do so. And so that map shows you the lay of the land in terms of which counties are participating in goals with Golden State Connect Authority. The blue are those our member counties who already had projects underway, but obviously we're working collaboratively with them. And then we've got, I think we're actually just down to one RCRC county who has not yet submitted a later grant. So that feels pretty successful in terms of moving that forward. Go to the next slide. I mentioned the strategic plans for broadband, and that was to make sure that every one of our counties has one. And we submitted about a $4 million grant to the federal government that was approved. Admittedly, it took a little while to approve. And so now we're kind of in the position of both processes happening at once. But we're going to make sure that it leads to a good product where, for your entire county, you can see where is it feasible to bring broadband in the form of fiber to the home, and where might wireless solutions be the better fit for truly remote areas, so you can get a complete picture of your county. And that will then allow you and us to drill down on strategies to meet those needs throughout the county. And so that is happening right now. And so it may feel a little bit like we're building two planes while we fly them, and that's probably true, but makes it exciting, and the money's here now, so we got to take advantage of it, and we need to do that for.
Can I interrupt you for a minute?
I welcome
it. Could you talk about the affordability piece to this? Because, you know, there's a lot of places that have fiber and all that. It's an affordability piece. How do we crack that nut, if you will?
Absolutely. So with Utopia Fiber, what we're setting is a price point that we think is we need to meet, and if we can't meet it, just strictly through traditional private financing, that we're going to need to bring in the CPUC monies, blend that with that private financing to keep it at that price point, which, if I'm remembering right, is roughly around $60 a month. Starlink, I think, is around $120 a month. And at the 60-month level, it would be considerably faster speeds than you get through Starlink. Then if at that $60 level, you may know as well that there is that CPUC program that can provide low-income households additional subsidized, so bring the rate down further. That's a very quick summary of a complex financing model, but in short, we're going to need to braid funding together to keep the price point at a level where the majority of folks can afford it and or take advantage of that CPUC program to bring it down even lower.
Thank you.
If you can go to the next slide. We also have an electric vehicle initiative underway, and I'm sure you look out and you say, not many have Teslas here, but across the state of California, 18% of new cars sold last month were electric vehicles, and that number is rising every month, and that means that the secondary market is going to also be increasingly used EVs, and that means there's going to be increasing demand for EV charging, not only in urban areas, but also in rural areas. And I also cite the statistic of Ford with their F-150 Lightning, where the first 2 years were sold out, same as true with Chevy's Silverado pickup, electric pickup. In 10 minutes, their initial orders were sold out. So we see a wave coming, and we don't want rural communities to be where they are with broadband presently, which is behind and trying to catch up. So we're working to, there is, again, tremendous state federal monies there, and we don't want that to pass straight over rural counties and all go to urban areas. So we're trying to reach up and grab it and make sure rural communities get their fair share of those monies. So whether people traveling through your community or people in your community who want to take advantage of that, they have the ability to do so in terms of EV charging. And so this slide on the left shows you an already existing permitting streamlining requirement. And so what we're helping counties do is make sure we get all of our counties to green. In some cases, they're already there, and the state just hasn't recognized it, hasn't updated it, so it's a fairly simple lift for us in terms of making sure the state recognizes that those counties are there. But in some cases, we're actually helping the counties do the permanent streamlining that's required under that statute. That's the first step. The second step, much like broadband, is we want to do EV readiness plans for each of our counties. And that raises two questions. One, is the grid ready in those counties? And for some of our counties, it isn't. So we need to assess that, and we need to make sure state and federal regulators understand the load that's going to be placed on an already stressed grid in those counties and come up with solutions for that. But the second piece is where should an EV charging deployment look like? And the reality is, if you live in a home with a garage, you probably can solve that. But for many people living in multifamily housing or apartments, that's not going to be easily solved. And worse, as 16 goes to 20, goes to 25% of the market being EVs, then when they're trying to buy that used vehicle, and an increasing percentage of those are EVs, they're going to have a smaller and smaller market share they can purchase a vehicle from if there isn't EV opportunities in multifamily housing. So the readiness plan is meant to assess that. We're looking to the state and federal governments to help partner, particularly with financing that. And the third be partnering with private entities for deployment of EV charging to make sure that those chargers actually get installed. You go to the next one. Another one of our entities is another nonprofit, Rural Alliance, and it's been dormant much of its life, but our board has asked us to bring it back to life because our board recognizes that we have a challenge. And that challenge is, I don't mean this pejoratively, but rather factually, our urban legislatures are often ignorant of the challenges in rural communities. And we have a challenge in terms of education and beginning to educate our partners in terms of what the true impacts are in rural communities and how to mitigate those impacts from policy changes that are proposed in rural communities. And so what RAI seeks to do is two things. One are educational tours to get people from primarily urban communities, whether they are legislators or regulars, out to rural communities to see on the ground potential impacts. And then secondly, to do research, to get academic research that supports some of the advocacy that we're doing in our work. And I'm happy to say that RAI has already received funding to initiate this effort, and we are working to develop a business plan for 2023 that will move straight into those tours and that academic research. If you can go to the next slide. Golden State Natural Resources is another nonprofit that we launched several years ago, and I want to thank Supervisor Cobstaff. He is one of five board members who sit on the board for Golden State Natural Resources, so I appreciate you going above and beyond the typical requirements of an RCRC delegate by putting additional time in and serving on this board. Golden State Natural Resources is really looking to promote and support forest health projects. And one of the things they've identified from the very start is one of the huge impediments to the projects is biomass removal. And that much of the biomass as part of a project is currently unmarketable, leaving few options for what to do with that biomass in place. GSNR just launched a CEQA process, a notice of preparation, to hopefully address that. And to address that by constructing two facilities that would take in that biomass, convert it to industrial pellet stock, and you can see, take it by train down to a port in the Bay Area, and then ship those pellets overseas to be used as a replacement for coal with energy production, a market that has been substantially increasing over the course of the last couple of years. On paper, this project that pencils out, and not only pencils out, has the potential to be profitable, but more importantly, it has the potential to scale out over time to ensure more of the state can feed biomass into those plants. And we know from our conversation with the Forest Service that they have projects just sitting there, forest health projects sitting there that no one is bidding on because they can't make a pencil out, and they can't make a pencil out because there's nowhere to take that unmarketable biomass. So again, the underlying drive for this nonprofit and for this project is not to sell pellets overseas, but to get forest health projects happening and to find a way to do so and incent that through the use of that presently unmarketable biomass. It is at a really formative stage right now in that we've just launched CEQA. The next 6 months are going to be telling in terms of getting through that CEQA process, but more importantly, financing opportunities. It's not an inexpensive project. We're talking to international partners about partnering and financing and bringing it to fruition, and we're hopeful and optimistic, and the next 6 months will be telling in terms of where that goes. If you can go to the next slide. I think this is the last one, I promise. I know we have a lot of entities, but there's a lot of challenges we're trying to help rural communities with, and that's Environmental Services Joint Powers Agency. And this is made up of 26 rural counties. And again, I have to thank Supervisor Cobstaff, who truly goes above and beyond here because he serves as the chair of this Joint Powers Agency. And I don't know it's the most glamorous role, so I'm appreciative of you doing it, but it is an essential role because it is the one venue where rural counties can have a collective voice and achieve some leverage through being all in the room at the same time with the regulatory agencies regulating landfills, waste management, etc. And so they meet regularly, and they meet regularly with those regulators to try to impress upon those regulators the unique challenges in rural communities of implementing what are often statewide legislation or statewide regulations. And I know it can be a challenging conversation, but Supervisor Cobstaff capably steers that group through those, and I want to say thank you for that. And again, for many of our small rural counties, they wouldn't have the staff individually to assess and implement those regulations. It would be overwhelming. And so ESJPA provides them some economies of scale. We provide contractors to assist with that. We provide staff to assist with that. And we achieve those economies of scale by working together. And so I think that's the last slide, and the last slide just has, or there's one more, but it just has a few follow-up places. And at this point, I'm happy to take any questions or receive any feedback you may have, and welcome that.
Any questions or comments? I'll
wait and see what the board has.
Right.
I just have a problem.
Any comments or questions from colleagues? Well, this is a great presentation.
Happy to do it. Happy to be here. Like I said, it was a beautiful drive. So
where are you the CAO at?
Yolo County. I was there about 11 years and prior to that, Amador County.
Okay.
One of the other programs that essentially, well, I'll say Siskiyou County helped initiate, is one of our recreation districts had trouble funding a solar project in Weed because they had to front the money in order to receive the grant from Pacific Power. And so I took this to RCRC, and Craig Ferguson, I think, is the one that took it, you know, and kind of thought about it, and they developed a program for special districts within the RCRC family counties that will loan up to $150,000.
It's increased a little bit,
but roughly to offset that, so that when that grant comes through, it's paid back. But without that mechanism, a lot of these special districts wouldn't have had that opportunity. They would have lost the grant altogether.
And that's part of what makes RCRC fun, is the entrepreneurial side, that we have that ability to look for sort of creative solutions that counties wouldn't be able to do individually. And that's a program that was wildly popular. It quickly reached capacity in terms of the funds we have available. So we're talking to the state controller's office and state treasurer's office about how can they assist, perhaps scale that out, because we recognize the demand is there for it.
So thank you for coming up today. Thank you,
you
for your time.
Absolutely.
See you tomorrow.
Yep, see you tomorrow.
I have one quick one.
Oh, yes.
Your RAI program, run with that. Because it's, you know, obvious to us that legislators never, they make decisions without ever seeing areas like this. As you said, it's a beautiful drive up here. Many of them have never seen this countryside. And the more times that we can get people like that up into areas like this and understand what we have to deal with on a day-to-day basis when we make our decisions, that's brilliant. And why hasn't it been done sooner? Because we have things to deal with all the time because of the things that those people do, and it kills us. So the more we can show other people where we live and what we do and what we have to deal with and what our constituents have to deal with, the better our job is and the more support we can get. So please do that. And if you need help, I'll be there to help you. Because that's so important for what we do here and how we live our lives and what we can give to our constituents. So thank you for that.
I know if our advocacy team was here, they would echo your words, because it makes their job that much more effective too when they're educated on the legislative side. So
absolutely.
Appreciate your words. Absolutely.
Yeah. Thank you.
Any comments online, Ms. Forster?
None online.
Mr. Radford, I guess you have some comments.
Yeah, one question. You mentioned...
Oh, Mr. Radford, if you just go up to the speaker. Yeah.
Sorry. Sir, you mentioned shipping the pellets overseas. What specifically overseas to who? Because we are concerned about China and what's going on with China controlling our world. Thank you.
Go ahead. Yeah, come on back up. Yeah.
The primary markets for industrial pellets right now are Europe. They are a big user. The UK, for example, is a big user. And with the Ukrainian conflict, that is prompting other European nations to reach out as they look for alternative fuel sources. So I would say that's one of the primary users. The second is Japan, and that is a result of them converting their nuclear power plants following the tsunami to a coal system. But they recognized for them coal was going to be short-term, and so they're looking to either co-fire or switch completely to other alternatives, including pellet stock. So those are the two primary markets.
Sorry. Thank you, sir. With that, we'll move on to item 8B, County Administration and Youth Art Project. No.
8A.
Sorry, 8A. Community Development Office of Emergency Services, the proclamation of local emergency.
Good morning, Board of Supervisors. We have on the agenda
continuation. Yes.
Oh, I'm Brian Stone. Name for the record. Thank you.
Assistant County Clerk. So we have a item for you, which is just a continuation of our health proclamation for the Mill, McKinney, and Mountain Fire. I would also like to personally thank you for coming in for that special meeting to sign that. So thank you. That is just a continuation of that, and then if that is pushed forward, and even if it's not pushed forward, I'll give you an update on where we're at with all the fires.
We'll do a motion first on the proclamation. That would be if you want to.
Second.
Okay. Supervisor Haupt?
Aye.
Supervisor Kopsa?
Aye.
Supervisor Valenzuela?
Yep.
Supervisor Ogren? Supervisor Chris?
Aye. Update.
All right. So we are now in the aftermath of, you know, the response is gone. The excitement of 18-hour days is over. So that completed. The Mill Fire was on September 13th. This is when we closed that out. So we're 3 months post-event. And this is really, for us, where we, as Office of Emergency Services and the rest of the county that has been fantastic, Health and Human Services, with being in this department, just across the board, this is really where we dig in, and it's the hard part. And we as OES, have helped and pushed along with the state to ensure that our folks throughout the county are not going without, especially as these fire seasons are going longer and we butt them right up into winter. So we didn't get much of a break this year with the fall. So now we're looking at snow and we're looking at colder nights, colder temperatures, and really trying to ensure that these folks have somewhere to reach out, which is myself, and we'll talk about that shortly. So the housing project is going really well with the trailers. For the folks that are in need of those trailers, we still have open lines and open communication for all of the fires that they can reach out to our office and we can figure out whatever works. The state has been very beneficial in helping us with that. As of right now, there's 168 parcels enrolled in the cleanup and 70 have been completed. There have been 6 teams working when weather is permitting. And Thursday through Monday of last week or yesterday, the ground crews were on obviously a weather hold. They can't do anything in the snow. So the teams were recalled back to Sacramento, but that doesn't mean they weren't working. We were working on some paperwork and some there's some little stuff that we needed taken care of, which just gave them that opportunity to do that. You will see today there are plenty of dump trucks and excavators with a green anvil sign on them. It says Siskiyou County. They're working today in the McKinney Scar. The snow there is not as intense as it is in Wheat. So they're able to kind of shift all the resources over to the McKinney Scar and take care of those. We have had, myself and Rick Dean's office have had we've had a lot of phone calls in regards to just small wins, and we'll take them when we can get them, whether it be saving trees or can you not take my seasoned firewood that didn't burn, and we've been able to help, even to the fact of going out and helping remove some of that wood from the sheds. So that's really where we're at with cleanup. It's going incredibly fast. Some of the other fires that we've had in the state are just starting the process. I know the Mosquito Fire has just started the initial phases of cleanup, and we'll continue to work hard to push that. We're working very hard with the Department of Water Resources for rain gauges, being that the hydrology was completely affected during the August 2nd rain event in the McKinney Fire, so we're taking care of that as well. And then I spoke with the state this morning, and there is still that heat dome federal deck that is pending at the highest federal level. So we haven't heard anything on that. And then the other update would just be we have some rain and we have some snow, so there's been no update to the drought from change from this week to last, and then we're down a little bit from last month. And then I think one of the most important parts for me, and I'd like to thank the board and our CAO for this as well, is that I'd like to introduce Owen, who has recently started with our office, and he is our disaster service coordinator. And it has been amazing. My phone rings nearly Well, it still brings a lot, but not as much. So I'd like to introduce Owen, and pending any questions for myself, this is the end of my report, but feel free to fire away if I don't want
to. Hello, my name is Owen Cabodal-Moline, and I'm the new Disaster Services Coordinator for Siskiyou County. I look forward to working with all of you, as well as all the citizens of the county, in helping with the recovery effort.
Any questions from colleagues?
Would you please send us an email so we have your email and phone number, please, so we know how to reach you and not have to worry about Brian?
Yes, ma'am, absolutely.
Thank you. Thanks for coming forward. Oh, sorry, Mr. Howell?
I do have a question, but maybe more broadly, not for Owen. Some of the rebuilding stuff is just starting to surface, and I know some of the structures in McKinney are in floodplain. In my past, working with IMTs with FEMA in the southeast, flood and hurricanes are pretty common. Somehow those states are able to work through the floodplain issues. Is there anything we can learn from them so that these aren't roadblocks locally, or how do we navigate that in the world of California that doesn't understand our issues?
But that's definitely going to be a challenge for us. In light of the dams coming out and the flood chain, the plain is going to be changing and affecting all of the King Fire, and ultimately Happy Camp, as mentioned. So, how we get there, I'm not sure just as of yet.
But I think other jurisdictions seem to seamlessly work through that pretty easily. Well, for us, it just looks like a brick wall in front of us. Mm-hmm.
Well, what it'll come down to is actually getting the mapping done and knowing what those elevations are.
What about reconstruction of what were largely historic structures that were in floodplain that were lost in the chain?
Yeah. But, I mean, at this point, we're obligated to make sure that there are floor level is above the 100-year floodplain. And right now, it's simply targeted. So that remains to be worked out.
I didn't think I'd get a good answer.
I don't know that, that's one area that would put the county at great risk to rebuild in a floodplain. Ultimately knowing that it's going to be an issue.
Sure. Okay.
Supervisor Cobb,
stay there, just a follow-up. Sorry. So how, either one.
Okay.
So how will we address with dams out, how is that floodplain going to change? Is it on our dime, or is it on the federal government's dime through Army Corps? How's that going to work? And is there an ask here that we should be putting front and center now as we enter these meetings of mitigation?
That's a fantastic question, and we have actually brought that up at we have every Tuesday and Thursday. It seems like every day. We have a Department of Water Resources meeting with the Klamath, and that tends to be something that the federal government likes to skirt around versus us getting a direct answer, and I'm going to push that a lot harder because that's certainly something we need to know. And moving forward for our folks and our survivors and the McKinney burn scar, they absolutely have to know this because right now we're fighting for the livelihoods of our county. For people to stay here. I mean, we saw this with the Slater fire. Me just coming into the recovery side of it is that the longer it takes, the more people are getting impatient and leaving. And that can, you'll see this in my report that we keep asking for, but you'll see this in my report. Now that I have Owen, I can spend more time on my report. So we're seeing that across the board, and that's one of the things and a very big challenge for us and for both of our departments is that how do we fix this, and how do we get an answer from a moving target that no one really wants to answer because it is a sensitive subject.
So I know it's sensitive, but it's getting rolled out now, right?
Absolutely, so, right? So now it's happening.
Yeah. So and so keep us apprised as we meet with state and federal officials of how we need to poke the bear on this, because I don't know that we brought this up yet. And just because of the rebuild alone, it's got to be a determined factor now. It can't be 5 years from now or after dam removal. We've got to have a picture of what that looks like.
Absolutely, yes. I'll keep you updated.
Okay.
So to clarify, maybe a little, you know, it is a question I've asked of attorneys. But to clarify an issue that I would have, I was going to ask this in court, but I'll ask it now since it came up. You know, who's going to be litigated for a takings? Since we're going to be mandated by Army Corps, as I understand it, to change our land use plan and designate floodplain over top of what was not floodplain before, who gets litigated? You know, we're just the participant, we're not the instigator.
Yeah, we need to be preempted.
And I know you don't really have an answer for that, but that's a burning issue on my part, as well as any what we saw with the Condit Dam, the subsidence of sediments compromising structure integrity along the lake. And, you know, those are real issues. I mean, they're real unresolved issues. They're complex legal issues. But I'd like to know what our liability is, or if there's a way to insulate us from that.
Yeah. I've written it down.
What?
You took the words right out of my mouth.
Well, here, I give them back.
Yeah, exactly what I was going to say. Condit Dam, Army Corps, Center, floodplain, they have to have, well, I would hope that there's some history of what happened with the Condit Dam and how sediment removal and the history of what has happened there and their floodplain issues, and they should be able to go back and look at that in relation to what we're up against and how that affected the people on the river there and the residents and rebuilding, and how that will affect what's going on here. Perhaps they didn't have the issues with fire mitigation that we are having. But we can certainly glean from really good information from what happened there. And they're not offering up that, they're not finding that out and bringing it to the table here. And we should be able to use that scientific information to base some of our recovery on. And that's,
if I may, I think an excellent point. We, us, drive down the Klamath River Road and we see this. Most of these folks that are making this decision are not here, not making these decisions, and making these decisions 1,000 miles away.
Right.
And I think it's, you can't go to war making decisions 1,000 miles away.
My point to RCRC about bring people here, show them what's going on. You know, we can't make those decisions a million miles away. We need that knowledge. So I think, yeah, that's right. Sucking the words out of my brain.
Any other questions on this from colleagues? I do see public comment back there, so we'll Mr. Radford, public comment?
Yes, sir. I'm a new member of the community down there downriver, and I've been a witness to all of the great work going on in the cleanup. It's really been fantastic. You know, as a builder, we used to, in the old days, and I don't know if it still has any standing, the grandfather clause. You know, in Monterey, Carmel, I used to get away with a lot of not having to go through all of the issues to deal with rebuilding an old complex or house, or how much of the house can we leave standing to stay away from the new, what do they call them, th- things that come up all the time in building, like sprinklers that cost people tons of money that they weren't expecting in a remodel. But, you know, you talk about the floodplain and these people trying to rebuild again on a small, very small monies that they have and maybe from their insurance, what it's going to cost them to try to rebuild in this new floodplain ordinance, or is it still going to be grandfathered in from what they had from before? Because it is their property, and we do still have a constitution in this United States. These are questions that will come up, and we've got to help these people rebuild rather than make it harder for them to rebuild. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, we already voted on this, so I'll move to item.
Is it okay to take a couple minutes?
Yeah, we can take a couple minute break.
Thank you.